I'm Christopher Lydon, your guest host on Tell Me About It. Until 2 o'clock this morning, the Maroons are what I'd like you and our guests to tell me about tonight. The Maroons were the rebels and the runaway slaves in Jamaica who beat the British before the North Americans did in the year 1738. They won a treaty that gave them land and self-government. But part of the deal was that they would mercilessly hunt down any new runaways on behalf of the English planters. The Maroons were known nonetheless as people of resistance, symbols of hope and freedom in slave time. So today, what does Jamaica know and care about the Maroons? Their leader, Nani, has her image on Jamaica's $500 bill, but most of my Jamaica friends can't tell me more than what's in the tourist books about her. Do you know the Maroon history? The Maroon legend? Do you believe it all? Are Jamaicans uncomfortable with the way the Maroons kept their freedom and to this day keep a bit of an edge? Or do all Jamaicans basically like to consider that they're all Maroons? Our phone is 926-7615 or 926-8631 or the toll-free 1-888-991-2080. We're talking about Maroons this morning on Tell Me About It. Give us a call and join the conversation. We want to know by 2 o'clock how we feel about these people of a sort of magic name, the Maroons of Jamaica. Our guest by phone is Meredith Rowe. He was colonel of the Compound Maroons from 1993 to 1998. He's now president of the Maroon Federal House of Assembly. Also in our studio is Clinton Hutton, who teaches political philosophy and popular culture at the University of West Indies at Mona. Meredith Rowe, welcome to Tell Me About It, and thank you for joining us. Let's start off with a big first question. Who is a Maroon? Meredith Rowe, welcome.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Who is a Maroon?
Well, so many people talk about the Maroons, you know, and believe that the word Maroon is really a tribe, but it's a group of the Asante tribe, African descendants, called Maroons, and you know, the Spaniards occupied Jamaica at a certain time, and they were the one who called us the Maroons, you know, and they. Well, some say Maroons mean that they were wilder and tame.
Mm.
But this special tribe had recognized the fact that our condition brought here into Jamaica were as such that we could not continue to be on the plantation, and it was tantamount to slavery, and so we are seen as a tribe, a warlike tribe that emanated out of Ghana. It was Gold Coast then.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a decision primarily from the fact that they commune regularly with their ancestors, and they run away from the plantation, and they reside mostly in the hills, you know, the interior.
Right.
And, of course, the section of island they call the cockpit is well known as a hideout for most of the, what was called the Leeward Maroons.
Yes.
And then we have the Windward Maroons.
Yes.
So the Leeward Maroons were the Maroons who are on the more like the western and southwestern section of Jamaica, while the Windward Maroons were mostly in the east, Portland, St. Thomas, St. Mary, and section of the Blue Mountain Valleys.
You know, from the 18th century, people have described the Maroons as looking different, being blacker, taller, handsomer than other people, other people from Africa. Are you making it sound also as if they were, from the beginning, a separate tribe, almost a separate people? let me put the question another way. Then and now, would you know a maroon when you see one? Can you tell the difference meeting a maroon?
Well, invariably you can, you know, because some of, but I must point out that's one of the method in recognizing the maroon. You know, you would always see the eyes have a ready area, a permanent one, not like when you got a blue in your eye and you see a red spot, but there's a real red. And that's a method that they use to identify the maroon. But I don't think the appearance is 100% sufficient to recognize the maroons, because like in farmer time, my friend, you know, people would see, by the way they see a person walk and how they dress, they would say, well, he's a police and that one's a teacher and so forth. But in truth and in fact, the deep entrenched culture, the genetics mm-hmm. and so forth are the more permanent means of identifying
which,
a maroon.
Genetics or culture?
Yep.
Which is it?
Both, because we have special marks on our bodies too. Some, you know, if you raise the arm, your right arm, you usually see a dark area there, like a blood mark, so to speak, and that is common among the maroon families. And it's scattered in Jamaica.
Let me ask you another version of the same question, Colonel Rowe, and that is, do you ever get into arguments? Do maroons ever sort of put each other to the test as to, you know, who's a real one? How would you prove it?
Well, you see, from the early existence of the maroons on this island, had actually reside in group among themselves, and during those times only that tribe were confined to given locations, and so people would from time to time would look on them and say, yes, you know, I just see them, I just see them, you know, that they are maroon. But the looks itself was just slightly different, because you must appreciate the fact that there are other African tribes in Jamaica, not only from Ghana, but Nigeria and Sierra Leone.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, you have a slight intermarriage among the tribe, and so the physical appearance will slightly deviate.
Colonel, in your own terms, including the culture, the history, the battle stories, the famous ambush techniques, the secrets of the maroon community, what is it in your own view that makes them absolutely different and special and important?
Well, there again, you know, you see, you're talking about different groups of the African origin, but the maroons are the Asante tribe. Their cultural practices and approach to things is slightly different from the other tribe, but it's not one that is too visible by the ordinary person, because you need to live within the confine of a time to really identify the different tribes.
Apart from identity, I want you to sort of relive the glory days with us and tell us, you know, some of your own war stories that make the maroon history so unusual.
Well, of course, as it is a known fact that the action during the pre-slavery era stood out first and foremost in that during the period the colonial masters occupied the island, this tribe they basically stick together and they run from the plantation and they took to the hills and they resist the slave masters. Mm-hmm. And the ambush guerrilla war that they fought. So the other tribe, from what we were told, were not keen in doing a similar act. It was unique to the Ashanti tribe. And so it was somewhat astonishing to the other blacks that from the coastal states. And so that was one way the other tribe saw as tedious, and a fact that the colonial masters somewhat deploy some intimidatory tactics. So they were not able to quickly appreciate what the Ashanti tribe were doing. And so when they ran from the plantations, inadvertently some of them chose to remain on their side, while some wanted to, but they were not as brave as the Ashanti tribe. And so they, you know, like the Ga and the Twa, different tribes. And so some of them have actually forced to accept like a petty bribes from the colonial force masters, not to run, but to stay on their side.
Right.
So over time, they infiltrate their minds in a way that they choose to side with the British. Some voluntary, some involuntary means. And so
that was a tough choice that they made, and I would...
it was indeed a tough choice.
You know, there's so many legends around this whole history. Last night, Roy Harris mentioned that the Maroons had a, you know, this is long before electricity, but they had a means of generating, he said, 400 volts that confounded the British. I've also read that Nani, the heroic leader of the Maroons in the, I guess that was the Second Maroon War, she had the power to draw bullets to her behind and blast them away. I mean, there's a whole lot of magical history in this. I want to introduce Clinton Hutton from University of West Indies, who knows this history well, and I want to sort of push toward the meaning of it today. Professor Hutton, what does this add up to? This story, and how should we begin to think about Maroons, that Maroon story in 2001?
Greetings, everyone. Mr. Roo.
Good morning, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty fine.
Good. First, I would say that marinage is a phenomenon in not just Jamaica, but in many areas in which blacks were enslaved during a period of 300 or so years.
Mm-hmm.
So that in Haiti, in Suriname, in Brazil, and other areas.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the States, I read.
And in the United States, to a less extent.
But Mexico?
But they do in Mexico, and Venezuela, and so on. So that's a phenomenon.
Mm.
And it's important as well, because what the Maroons did was to show by their actions and their activities in constructing communities outside of slavery, often illegally. Well, illegally, until their freedom was confirmed in a sense. Truth by way of treaty or so on, as in the case of the Maroons in Jamaica. So that essentially the culture of freedom that developed that blacks developed in the Americas during slavery, mm-hmm. Marinage played a very important role in that, in pointing to the fact that, that people can indeed be free, and therefore was motivated people to struggle to be where the Maroons were. So that's one of the first importance of this phenomenon we call Marinage.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the Maroons developed military, an art of war, military tactics, mainly surrounding guerrilla warfare,
mm-hmm.
Which played a significant role in further struggles. In Cuba, for example, in the Sierra Maestra Mountains, mm-hmm. The Maroons played a very important role in the First War of Independence, and the second indeed, in that quite often Maroons were the ones who trained many of the early troops in the First War of Cuban Independence. That's very important, and similarly in in the state that we now call Haiti, a former French colony, the Maroons played a very important, in fact, a critical role in the kind of warfare that developed at different points in the struggle for independence and in other areas as well. So that is very important too.
Yes. Yes, you see. Yes, you see.
Meredith Rowe, go ahead.
Yes.
Yes. The fact that the Maroon can be described as a space setter so far in this hemisphere, because their early demonstration of their ability to not only to identify it was what was actually happening, but resisted the action and the success that they achieved from it. It became an eye opener for all the black people within the hemisphere.
Yes.
And so they become to develop that self consciousness and the self pride and the will to follow suit in that they have seen a small group of people that had withstood the test and to face challenge the mighty military groupings of these
Mr. Rowe, I want to let Professor Hutton finish his sort of general outline of the importance of the Maroon history.
Yes. Let me say again that in Jamaica, while most of the Maroons, not all, most of the Maroons were Akan speaking people, mm-hmm. coming from Ghana. And many Jamaicans outside of Marinage were also Akan speaking people, although there were other people from other nations of Africa here. In Haiti, many of the Maroons were from the Congo region of Africa, so that there's no specific merit to say or specific level of wisdom in a particular group of persons, in that these persons are special and therefore become Maroon or wiser to notions of and cognitive views about freedom.
Right.
Okay. The other thing is that Maroonage essentially started in Jamaica on a large scale in 1655, when the British conquered Jamaica from the Spaniards. People took to the hills, to different parts of the country. In fact, not just those two areas, but those two areas after a while became solidified as the main areas of Maroonage in Jamaica. And in fact, in 1729, the many people in Jamaica, I'm talking about the British population at that time was about 7.5 thousand Europeans, primarily of British extraction. They took the view that this country or this real estate could not develop the way in which they wanted it to develop if all of these people were out there settling, define what ought not to be, define the status quo, that it will undermine their efforts to make the country into a huge sugar estate, as a matter of fact. And what they in fact did in 1928, it was by the political and economic elites in the country, was that there needs to be a reenslavement of the Maroons or their extermination.
Mm-hmm.
And hence the first Maroon War. Which lasted about 10 years, thereabout, give or take 1 or 2 years, in which they tried to exterminate or to re-enslave the Maroons.
Mm-hmm.
They were not able to do that. They met with successes, but ultimately the Maroons prevailed in keeping their freedom.
Yes.
And the British signed a treaty with them.
But
as the only way that they could establish a viable plantation system in mm-hmm. Jamaica. The treaty had there were several elements to the treaty. One, for example, was that a captain or an official from the state from the state would live amongst the Maroons. Two, that the Maroons would hand back anybody
yes
who tried to run away and live with them. They would return them and associated with that they would indeed, in a sense, become a force to capture not just people who would run away to Maroon settlements, but people who would run away from it.
This is the sticky part.
That was part of the agreement, right? Among other things.
Yeah, but this is where it becomes very for some people hard to digest, yes. because they have made this. Really, it's the first victory against slavery, yes. and it's the first big military victory against sort of British imperialism in colonies anywhere, and yet it has this hook in it,
yes.
that they become a kind of police force against other people's yes. freedom, and that was the deal.
Yes, but what the hook means, though, you know, is that the Maroons know that they could not prevail. And the British knew that they could not prevail without a compromise. So it's a compromise on both sides. And that should be recognized. That there was a compromise on both sides. In a sense, the Maroons became a sort of power broker in Jamaica.
Hmm.
Power broken based on the on fear. One, fear by the British. That if the Maroons joined with the enslaved, that blacks will prevail in the country.
Yes.
And there was fear amongst blacks for the opposite reason. Right?
They held the balance of power.
In a sense, for some time, the Maroons, in a sense, held the balance of power in the country. In that the British could not defeat them. But neither did the Maroons have the requisite to defeat the British.
Interesting.
Right? And that's therefore... Heavy.
Meredith Rowe, do you want to comment on that? Is that the way you see it?
Well, yes, I would love to. I would like to think that the battle that going on and it's like the boxing in a ring, so to speak, you know, two sides, while one might have the upper edge or the advantage, but both sides are getting weary still. So in the end, and then the spectators now would of course split. So somewhere to half or near half, where the majority might actually on this side that they think that is trading the more effective punches.
Mm.
Now you have the wider black people that was at caught in the middle, so to speak, and as we said earlier, that some would have loved to join ranks with the maroon groupings, while others, but were not able to because they were fully infiltrated by the colonial matters, while others had effectively decided to play well with the colonial forces, and so at a time when they think that they could defect, then both sides have lost some level of mistrust, exhibit some level of mistrust, so they can't trust each other, because the Maroon tribe, as we know it, they were concerned about some of these black people. They should be on their side. It is evident in Ghana too now. They fight some 7 battles, for example, over there, of which they won 5 of the 7. And some of the people from the tribe, from the coastal states, they joined with the colonial masters, not that they wanted to, but some were actually forced to do it.
Colonel Rowe, I take your point, and I also like Professor Hutton's point that they held a kind of critical balance and exercised the power to prevent either an overwhelming slave rebellion or a complete crackdown by the colonial powers. Our phones are 926-7615 or 926-8631 with a toll-free 1-888-991-2080. We're talking about the legend, the history, and the modern meaning of the Jamaican Maroons from the 17th century until today. In 2001, give us a call. Join the conversation with Meredith Rowe and Clinton Hutton. Caller, thank you for joining us. This is Tell Me About It.
Hello.
You're on the air. Welcome.
A pleasant morning to you, my brother.
And thank you.
Well, Christopher.
Yes.
A pleasant morning to your guest that you have there.
Yes.
Professor Hutton.
Yes.
Morning.
And, Mr. Rowe.
Yes.
Sir, morning.
And all the other staff of RDR.
Okay.
And the listeners too. And those who tune in on the internet overseas. I want to say welcome to Jamaica, Mr. Christopher.
Thank you. We're loving it.
Yes. And you have a lot to learn.
That's for sure.
And you also will be learning that there is a reincarnate Marcus Garvey.
Yeah, we talked about Marcus Garvey at length last night, and I loved it.
Yes. I'm pleased to let you know that you also will learn that there is a reincarnate Marcus Garvey.
Yes. But now I want to stick to the Maroons. Where do you stand on the Maroon question?
Yes. Very important discussion on the Maroon. Now, I've called on the Maroon before they have their anniversary, January.
Yes.
Because every January they have a celebration.
Yeah.
For their so-called victory.
Okay. Why do you say so-called?
Because I do not by the argument of Professor Hutton that the Maroon, based on my research, that the Maroon could not do better. They were in a position to accept to accept and sign the peace treaty with the British.
You think they could have made a better deal?
Yes.
Or a better moral choice?
Yes.
Which was it?
Better deal, but you know, they tried to come and pick you up.
What deal could they make?
Huh?
What deal could they make?
What deal
could they have made?
They could have hold off. They could not do better because, you know, the British know that they couldn't hold out. how you come to that conclusion, sir?
The British knew they couldn't hold out.
I didn't say such thing. Yes,
What I said is that the two forces, the British and the Maroons, could not defeat each other. And as a result of that, they signed a treaty.
Yes.
And in signing the treaty, certain things were agreed to.
They could not defeat each other?
Right.
I don't understand that. Explain that to me.
There was a Maroon War for 10 years, almost.
Yes.
From 1729 to about 1739.
Yes.
And at the end of it, they signed a treaty. The treaty allowed them to keep a certain portion of the land that they lived in.
Now,
Is saying that they could have done better. Do you mean to say they could have fought to a victory for all the black slaves in Jamaica? Caller, do you want to argue that point? Meredith,
yes.
Meredith, do you want to answer it?
Yes, I would love to, but not this time. I'm a bit uncomfortable with the view suggested by this caller. Really, you see. And that is why we are concerned that our history has to be rewritten in a comprehensive and a structured manner. And it can only be done by people who think like the Maroons, really, because what is portrayed out there from those many books written about the Maroons are clearly have a lot of misgivings in it.
Listen, I think we should take a break, and when we come back, let's walk through as much as we know of the real history here, the real legend and the real history, and see if we can nail this point about the victory of the treaty, or the so-called victory, as the caller wants to label it. Hang on, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back,
okay.
You can call in at 926-7615 or 926-8631. This is Tell Me About It. We're talking about the Maroons, and we'll be right back.
Beyond Entertainment. Let's just be. B-E. Beyond Entertainment. The 10-minute entertainment feature that takes you behind the scenes, keeping you in the know, making it concise, credible, exciting, with the facts first. Before everything, B-E. Beyond Entertainment. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 6:30 p.m. on RJR 94 FM during Beyond the Headlines. I'm Judith Bartley. Do nothing. Go nowhere. Believe nothing. Until you've been Beyond Entertainment. Just be. Be. Beyond Entertainment. Beyond Entertainment.
The 1970s, one of the most creative periods of our musical heritage.
So lift it up again.
The 1980s, the era that put the dance in dance hall and started the redefinition of radio.
Let's hear it then.
Party in the best of both worlds. Listen every Saturday from 7:15 p.m. Hanging out with Tony Owens, playing the best party songs of both decades. The wickedest dance hits of the 80s, plus the sweetest of the swinging 70s.
The Sprint Lucky Caller promotion is back. Yes, collect callers. Use Sprint for your regular collect calls to the USA, and you can be a lucky caller and win cash. The Sprint operator will let you know if you are a winner. In addition to all that cash for being a lucky caller, you can also be a winner with me, Richie B, on RJR. Join me Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 3:30 p.m. on the beat for the Sprint Lucky Caller promotion. All you have to do is answer a question related to this exciting promotion, and you can win a fabulous gift basket of Grace credits. You know the way to call the USA. 1-800-877-8000. Hey, the Sprint Lucky Caller promotion is back. Don't miss it.
Yeah.
artists, painters, portrait makers, gallery operators, there's always space for your exhibits, and your exhibitions end when you say when. Call Multimedia Jamaica Limited at 926-1100-9 to find out about our gallery online. For a low monthly fee, we'll take your exhibition around the world. Check in with us today. Multimedia Jamaica Limited, a member of the RJR Communications Group.
I'm Christopher Lydon, your guest host on Tell Me About It till 2 o'clock in the morning. We're talking about the Maroons in Jamaica's history, the runaways and former slaves and some never slaves who got their own land and freedom from the British. The first victory against the British colonialists anywhere near here, long before the United States got it. How do we feel about them, and especially about the fact that part of the bargain with the British was that they would not only send back runaway slaves that came to them, they would be sort of enforcers in recapturing slaves that got away. Join the conversation with Meredith Rowe, who's now the president of the Maroon Federal House of Assembly, and Clinton Hutton, who teaches political philosophy and popular culture at University of West Indies. Caller, good morning, and welcome to the conversation. Meredith?
Yes, sir.
Are you there? Sorry. Did you want to respond to the caller's suggestion of a so-called victory in the Treaty of 1739?
Indeed. I think it's a compromise term. My friend used when he termed the victory. It was not adjective because there's a good old saying, to Simeon Conley with me, two different things. And a former minister of national security has said some years ago about, the state of mind of any person who is looking down through the nozzle of a gun, so to speak. Here you have a battle. Now, our information state that we had nearly 80 years of military confrontation. Now, our opponents were down to get us at any means, at any cost, big guns pointing at us. And we had to do what we did to preserve our integrity and our rights and freedom and so forth. Now we have this confrontation. And I said earlier that both sides would have been very somewhat tired and fatigued and worn out. Now the long battle that faces the Maroon. You were seeing that the tribes were split, divided. Not everybody was thinking in like manner. Now, we were seeing some of our own block, whether voluntary or involuntary, joined ranks with the colonial forces come hunting at us. Now, we reach a point where there have to be a peace settlement. Now, you will understand that during a battle, trust, the whole question of trust has been lost, so to speak, at least are temporarily suspended. Now, when there going to be peace and friendship again, one have to bear in mind about, what had happened and how it happened.
Yep.
So it's difficult to take a person back into your confidence now after such an awesome experience, Because we didn't have only the British coming after us now, but they armed some of the blacks too, the arms of the blacks. So after peace, after war, there's a calm. So what could we do given this scenario, given the situation? Then there is no way that you could just come put somebody who were fighting you in your arms like that. It would be very difficult. We are talking about human, We are not super beings. We are human. when you lost confidence, to regain it, you accept it with reservation, One has to. I am human. And when you do that, you say, okay, I will forgive you. I will forgive you. But you cannot really forget. because that's history, you know. And to deal with your charge your future, you have to look at the past. And when you look at it, then you know, when you have a person in your last person of trust, who are you going to just accept back the person right away and take the person right into your bedroom, so to speak? No, you have to keep the people for some time in your living room and make passage of time pass, you know, and before you can.
Colonel Rowe, stand by for callers. We're talking about maroons and what they mean to Jamaica today, what they symbolize about Jamaica, even in the world of 2001. Caller, good morning. Welcome to Tell Me About It.
Preston, good morning. I noticed you started your conversation with the British era and the Maroon Wars, but I have come across information from one Kofi Agorsa, and he makes mention of the Maroons from the period of the Tainos, that they actually had habitation with the Tainos, and they have found artifacts through archaeological excavations that shows relations between the two, the Maroons and the Tainos, or indigenous peoples. And I have to agree with Colonel Rowe.
Yes.
That it is somewhat unfair for us as Jamaicans in the 20th to 21st century judging the Maroons. It's not fair for one to look at history and make comments as the other caller did, judging the Maroons for what they did when they did, because we were not in their circumstance. And perhaps if we should be in their shoes, what would we have done?
Well, it's hard to say. I wonder, Clinton Hutton, how do you feel about the way they exercise this very awesome power between the British and their slaves? I mean, are they a symbol to you of liberation or of repression? And what do they, you know, what does it come to in terms of its meaning?
Well, two things. First, to begin with, the first point that a caller made about Tainos and Maroons. During the period of the Spaniards, some blacks did escape and join with the Tainos. But the bulk of Maroonage started when the British defeated the Spaniards, a point that I have made before. And indeed, when the British came here, there were still remnants of Tainos around. There are, among some Maroons, they are mixed with Tainos. But on the substantial question, the history of the Maroon is first of all a history of struggle for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first
thing.
Secondly, part of the history of the Maroons showed that in all major anti-slavery insurrections in Jamaica after the Maroon Treaty, that the Maroons sided with the British on all of these issues. Now, the British always wanted to get rid of the Maroons. They didn't want them. Let that be absolutely clear.
Mm-hmm.
The first Maroon War was a war to exterminate or re-enslave the Maroons. They were forced to sign a treaty. The second Maroon War was similar, a war to exterminate the Maroons by the British. Some of them were deported to Nova Scotia, and some of them ended back in Africa. So let us be absolutely clear on that. The second thing is that if the balance of forces in the country were different, the activities of the Maroons would have been different. As we have seen in other countries, like with the Maroons in Saint-Domingue, which became Haiti later on. Right? So that we should not take a position. Well, in Jamaica so far, there are two main positions on the Maroons.
Okay.
One position is that the Maroons constitutes in Jamaica a mercenary force who sold out their fellow black people. That's one view on the Maroons.
That's a heavy charge.
That's one view on the Maroons.
Okay.
That view, I think, is an extreme view.
Indeed.
It's an extreme view. Because the struggles of the Maroon showed us that they supported the British under circumstances to suppress slave insurrections. But it also showed that the Maroons struggle for freedom. So that view is an extreme view. The other view is similarly an extreme view, that the history of the Maroons is all a history of struggle for freedom. The Maroons certainly struggled for freedom. There's no doubt about that. That's why they ran away. In the process of trying to constitute their communities, they prevented the British from re-enslaving them, and they prevented the British from exterminating them.
Mm.
That's a fact. So in a sense, the Maroons were able to bring a stalemate to the equation. They were able to do that. And that is, I think it is in that context that we should see the other things that took place. I think that after a while, with respect, for example, to slave rebellions in Jamaica, after a while, there were Maroons who wanted to join with the slaves to fight. So that amongst the Maroons themselves, there were differences.
Yes. Okay.
Eh? But there's also the pragmatic view. What guarantees there that what we now have will not be taken away? Should we put everything into slave insurrections, what would happen? So that it's a complex issue.
It surely is. And I want to say, one of the things
it's very that complex
interests me as a non-Jamaican, but as you know, an earnest visitor,
yes,
is whether Jamaicans today, which side of that Maroon history they put themselves on. Do they see themselves as cultural resistors in the global economy and global politics, even in Western Hemisphere politics? Or do they see themselves as very, very skillful go-along guys? But that I want you to think about that one a little bit today. Whether you know, we have these two images of Jamaica, even in a sort of North American way. There's a lot of the sort of good old British performers, marvelous cricket players and great English speakers, kind of. One sec. But then on the other hand, the kind of eternal rebellion that we hear in dancehall music and in some of the spirit of Jamaican politics. In other words, which side of the Maroons is it that Jamaicans see themselves in the modern world, even as the 21st century progresses? It's time for a caller. Thank you for joining us on Tell Me About It.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, I just returned. I'm a returning resident. I see where I got a copy of the treaty out of the British Archive.
Uh-huh.
The treaty,
The Treaty of 1739.
Yes. Signed by Captain Cajot.
Yes.
I don't know if it's accurate or what, but I got it in the British...
Which of the archive, please?
The British Archive. The
National Archive?
In London, yes.
In London?
Yeah, London.
Go on.
You know, I have blown up a big copy because I was so proud, you know, to read something about the Maroons. But on the other hand, whatever the Maroon does is okay with me. Because
what?
I live in Britain for a long time. And I went there and I am a qualified accountant.
Yeah.
And right now, I have a current accounting journal, January 2001, 99.8% of all the accountants in the big firms are British.
Hmm.
99% of the mid-sized workers then are British. 99.7% of the clerical staff in all the firms, they are British. And although they have, although the British control the Commonwealth, Africa, Caribbean, they do not give them a chance to be employed in these firms.
Hmm.
So whatever the Maroon does, okay with me.
I don't understand that.
Pardon me?
I don't understand that. Whatever the Maroon does, it is okay.
Maybe Chris, maybe based on how he interprets the copy there, and
well, but I think he's also talking about his own experience. I think he's saying that British power and maybe British arrogance is so overwhelming that you got to cut the Maroon some slack here.
That's right, Maroon. If it wasn't for the Maroon, a lot of people in Jamaica would have gone AY. The Maroon set the pace. This is what we want. This is what it's going to be.
Chris.
Yes, please.
Yes, that caller there now. I don't know the contents of the copy that he has. I would mind if their contact could be made where if I get a copy of what he photocopy what he has and I pay for the copy so that I could match it with our
record. I'm sure he'll be happy to share it with you.
Yes, you know, you conveniently can give him my number and I would love to.
Yes.
But I go back.
I want to hear the caller's point that, you know, the Jamaican in London today is even now sort of celebrating the toughness of the Maroon resistance. Is that your point?
Yes, 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 definitely so. And I want to clear up. I don't know. I would like to ask some questions. Like the first set of black people that come from Africa, I heard that they came from Ashanti tribe.
Mm-hmm.
I want to find out if that is correct, you know, and where the Maroon came from. Was it an Ashanti tribe?
Indeed.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's why they are so aggressive. Out of all, I have traveled very widely. I just returned here about 6 months ago. I've been 12 years in London and the rest in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jamaican blacks are the most aggressive black I ever come across. Even a few years ago, the FBI said on a TV, on a tape, that the posse gang from Jamaica come from nowhere and don't care nothing to die. Mm-hmm. He said no other blacks in the world are like the Jamaican posse.
So okay.
Is that something I am proud of? But I'm saying, are they from the Ashanti tribe? Are we from the Ashanti tribe? I don't know. I'm asking questions.
Yeah, but let us assume that it's so. It is partially so.
Yes.
But because there are people from different parts of Africa here. There are many from Ghana.
Yes.
From what we now call Ghana, right?
Yes.
Lots of Jamaicans are from that region.
Sierra Leone too.
Descended from that region, right?
Yeah.
But there are also Jamaicans from other regions as well.
Yes.
But are you saying that because we are from that region, it means that we are aggressive?
That's what.
So what happened to those from that region who are in Cuba? From that region who are in Cuba, or in
other parts. When the slave ship was passing,
yes,
all the bad boys from the Shanti tribe. We're left in Jamaica.
Oh, they don't speak them out like that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Left in Jamaica.
No, we have to find some other reasons to describe what you're talking about.
Well, you know,
I'm going to ask some questions. I don't know, you know.
Okay.
If you
okay.
guys can educate me, then I go from there.
Colin, I want to ask you this, and then we're going to take a break. But if that is the sort of the moral lesson and the inheritance of the Maroons, this kind of aggressive, smart, tough Jamaican presence in the world today, what would the Maroons be using it for? What would you want it to be used for? What would you want that Jamaican voice
to say? Protection
of what?
Of yourself.
Of each man for himself, or
for
is there a larger group interested?
For the country and the whole. For Jamaican and the whole. You see, when you compare the American blacks and Jamaican blacks, it's two different people. What the American blacks took from the American whites, the Jamaicans wouldn't take it.
Indeed.
They would fight back. I know that they would fight back.
Agree.
Repeat that for me, please.
There's a difference between the Jamaican blacks and the American blacks. What the American blacks took from the American whites, Jamaican will never take it from the British.
My brother, we really need to make, we need to be think more carefully when we talk. In the United States, I've been teaching students here from the United States every summer for the past six or so years.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they constantly write to me about is that it is the first time that they have been in a place where all the authority figures and everybody around them is like them.
You're only Don Jamaica here.
The African Americans who came here.
Oh yes.
Right. So that's why I'm telling you, you need to be careful in making statements that do not really take into consideration context, right?
Yeah. But when you compare what the American blacks went through.
Yes.
Even 3 years ago, a guy from Texas.
Yes.
Took a black guy.
Yes.
Tied him on his foot.
Yes.
His foot and drug him.
I know about that case.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah, we all know that.
So that would never happen here. That could never happen here.
Why it could never happen?
Eh? The people here would rebel badly.
Yes?
Yes.
But how many times we have heard cases in Jamaica of injustices being done to ordinary people? Being shot illegally. Being murdered.
There are certain laws. There are man-made laws and there are God-made laws.
What? So what?
And if you don't obey man-made laws or God-made laws, you're being punished.
I don't understand that.
You don't understand that?
There are established cases in Jamaica where police murder people. We know that, don't it?
Well, I just came back here 6 months ago. You don't have to.
You can be aware and know it still,
yeah,
don't you?
Well,
you weren't in America, but you know what happened in the United States, didn't you?
If what?
Were you in the United States?
30 years.
Yes.
Just came back.
Right, but you don't have to be in the United States to know what happened there.
Well,
because in other words, the case in Texas that you raised,
yeah,
I know about it.
Yeah.
I know a lot about it.
Yes.
I've written about it.
I know the guy who even buried the damn guy.
Right, but in other words, I don't have to be there to know. To know.
Yeah, this is a deeply interesting question about sort of what would the maroon response, and maybe Meredith Rowe, you should comment. What would it be to the
tie somebody on the foot and draw them?
No, I'm thinking about what we read are, you know, in the neighborhood of 150. Killings by police in Kingston every year. I mean, where would the maroon leadership? How would you respond to that?
But you have to say it has to be two sides. How much hoodlum kill police?
My brother,
police are human beings, you know. Police are human beings.
And you're just showing us the complexity of the problem. That is why I'm saying to you, you cannot judge African Americans the way you are doing. We have to put these things into context.
Yes.
How
come nobody quarrel when a policeman got killed? When a policeman killed, nobody said nothing. When a man got killed, everybody talk about it.
I think you're missing the point, you know.
Oh, yeah?
You're really missing the point.
What?
You made a statement that African Americans are a sort of soft
people. I said Jamaicans.
They allow a lynching to take place and did nothing about it, which is not true. Right?
What?
Somebody,
but you know,
this is not true.
The guy got caught. They caught him and they jailed him.
So what?
And he, I don't know. I didn't follow up the arm story because, you know,
But you need to. I think there's a we often in Jamaica stereotype African Americans. Forgetting about the struggle led by Martin Luther King. Forgetting about the struggle led by Malcolm X.
Yeah.
Forgetting about the struggle led by many other persons.
Yes.
And some of them who have been assassinated for it.
What about the Kennedy brothers? The John F. and Robert.
We're getting far afield from the maroon question. I want Meredith Rowe to say, sort of, interpret the Maroon thinking on the matter of police brutality, in Jamaica today. The Maroons could be identified with the police. They could also be identified with a popular rebellion against them. What's Maroon wisdom on this sort of extrajudicial killings?
Me, Chris?
Yes, Meredith.
Okay. It's a very touchy subject at this time, you know.
You've done police work yourself, have you not?
Yes, I have.
So your testimony is especially interesting.
But one has to put it in the scale now, weight in the balance, really, you know. Because while we share the view that some of the killing might not be justified on either side, but you have to look at the whole societal order at this time, you know, and I try to determine the state of mind of the people out here that who hold a gun. And
But to me, the simple question is still sort of whether the Maroon spirit identifies with the establishment or the poor victims. But think about it a sec, and we'll come back after a short break. We're talking about the Maroons as living symbols in Jamaica today of toughness, resistance. We haven't talked enough about their cultural continuity with Africa and with the early history in this island, but their spiritualism, their magic, but the whole meaning of a kind of resistance force and a resistance culture in the modern world, is that part of what Maroons mean to Jamaica and to all of us? Give us a call at 926-7615 or 926-8631 or the toll-free number 1-888-991-2080. We'll be right back.
The Sprint Lucky Caller promotion is back. Yes, collect callers. Use Sprint for your regular collect calls to the USA, and you can be a lucky caller and win cash. The Sprint operator will let you know if you are a winner. In addition to all that cash for being a lucky caller, you can also be a winner with me and Richie B on RJR. Join me Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 3:30 p.m. on the beat for the Sprint Lucky Caller promotion. All you have to do is answer a question related to this exciting promotion, and you can win a fabulous gift basket of Grace products. You know the way to call the USA. 1-800-877-8000. Hey, the Sprint Lucky Caller promotion is back. Don't miss it.
Silver.
Gold. Platinum. How much are you paying for website hosting?
It doesn't matter. Switch to Multimedia Jamaica Limited and pay 35% less than whatever you're paying right now. High quality doesn't have to mean high cost. Multimedia Jamaica Limited will give you fast, reliable, and secure hosting for your website. Can you think of a better reason to switch? We can't. Call us today at 926-1100 or 384-5530 anytime. Conditions apply. Multimedia Jamaica Limited, a member of the RJR Communications Group.
The big one, the 4-in-1 special, the quad-pack combo advertising package. Three radio stations with approximately 50% market share, and a TVJ also with approximately 50% market share. Advertisers, the quad-pack combo advertising package gives you reach and frequency at an affordable rate too. In other words, you're getting the... In other words, you're getting the... The quad-pack combo, RGR 94 FM, TVJ, Fame FM, Radio 2 FM. Advertising has never been so easy. Advertising has never been so affordable. Give us a call today at 926-1100 and ask for our dynamic marketing department. Over now.
If over 90% of us in Jamaica were fully literate, what would that be like?
There'd be less violence. People would make more intelligent choices. Stop with the idiot things with a cutout.
Exactly. So can we see the big picture?
Stop thinking more me, me, me. Don't be selfish. Don't be so selfish.
Think about our beautiful country and be a part of making it better for all of us.
By joining up with the 100% Literacy for Jamaica program.
So this is how the 100% Literacy for Jamaica program works.
There are marked book barrels in all Sangster's bookstores. Here at the radio station, 32 Lyndhurst Road, Horton's Pharmacy in Mandeville and Spanish Town. And we'll tell you where else.
Go through your books and pick out reading material and storybooks in good condition for children 4 to 11 years of age. Or you
can... For crying out loud, you can just purchase a few books for the kids. What's it gonna do? Short your lunch money?
Take the books to any one of the 100% book barrels and drop them in. You can also volunteer to read to kids in your parish.
Yep. You can call the hotline 806-1493 and tell us where and who you are and when you can read to kids in school on a Friday or at a parish library on a Saturday.
Be a part of the 100% Literacy for Jamaica program.
It's the thing, haven't you heard?
The full on training.
Yeah.
For more information, call the hotline 806-1493.
806-1493. Zine, be cool like that.
Yeah. I'm Christopher Lydon, your guest host from the States on Tell Me About It until 2 o'clock this morning. We're talking about the Maroons, the history, the legend, the modern meaning. In January, the Maroons will be celebrating again the anniversary of their victory and their treaty in the 18th century. We haven't talked enough about the culture that they're celebrating as well. One of the Maroon colonels, L.G. Harris, wrote that for all we've talked about their military history, the story is really, as well, an odyssey of courage and endurance, sublimely inspirational, he writes, in testifying to the fact that mortals may, by fixity of purpose, strength of character, and constancy of faith, rise from the purely physical plane to the yet unexplored heights of the spiritual, where the horizons are illimitable, where wonders are wrought, where there is communion and fellowship with the souls of departed heroes, and angels minister to the needs of men. So there's more than just warfare to the Marine story, to the Maroon story. Meredith Roth, I'd ask you, what part of the Maroon culture can all of Jamaica share in terms of language, in terms of spiritual understanding, in terms of food, clothing, that sort of thing? Meredith Rowe?
Okay.
Please.
Well, all of them except the spiritual aspect can be easily adapted. Easily adapted in that while we have that cultural origin, we also fit in with the Western style and taste and appetite too. But our historic celebration that comes on January 7th this year is significant and purposeful, and the wider Jamaica community fits in very well in that thousands and thousands of Jamaica travel to a kampong each year, and they participate. Well, they observe the manner in which our dishes are prepared, our dance, our drumming, our malism, and all of those stuff, and they appear to be quite fascinated by what we do on that day. And and of course, even you yourself, if you come to a kampong on January 7th, you know, you are going to find very accommodating to observe the manner in which we carry out our cultural rites.
Clinton Hutton, have you been to these celebrations, and do you feel you've got a sort of grip on the cultural side of this story?
Well, I've been to a kampong several times. I've been to Moortown. I've sampled the food and I've seen the music played. I have an interest in traditional Jamaican music. Maroon music is a part of that tradition.
What does Maroon music sound like?
Well, it's a lot. It sounds close to Africa. Well, it's African diaspora music that is in some way closer to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of its mix, than say a mento, which is a more syncretic form of music, but nonetheless it is a Mara music is an African diaspora music. Their storytelling, and sometimes their songs are done in some of the in words that survive. Language that survived.
I was going to say, how much of the Maroon language is still identifiable?
Well,
do you speak it, Meredith Rowe?
Well, you have some level of it. The different Maroon communities are versed in the different eras of a cultural life. Because, for example, in Moortown, they speak more of the language than other Maroon community. While in our kampong, our abeng, blowing off the abeng, and what took place at the gravesite of our ancestors, Kojo and so forth, are comparable, different too, you know, more
the abeng, the abeng is the cow's horn.
Well, it's something represent, look like, similar to a huge cow horn, yeah.
Okay.
Uh huh. But, it to me, it watered down somewhat because of the age of that horn and our creeping adaptation of the Western style, you know.
Mm.
Because we know that, as we are told by, and you know, our history was done orally, it passed on orally, tradition, you know, and so forth, that when the abeng is blown, that it was very astonishing to the British forces in many ways, and one of the ways is that they are frightened at the sound of it, and secondly, it blown in the Akan, and then they could not interpret what was being said from it. They could not, because it is an official state instrument that primarily sends message, and it has that spiritual built-in mechanism in it that really appear to have that supernatural stuff, you know, that
yes,
haunt, sort of haunt and taunt the British, and they just could not understand the mystery of it, so to speak.
Stand by for callers, Meredith Rowe. We're talking about Maroons on Tell Me About It. Call in at 926-8631. Caller, you're on the air. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Morning, Christopher.
Morning.
Morning to all, I guess.
Good morning.
I was in a kampong town for the first time in my life on Saturday. And just sitting there talking with the youth, I never realized all this time. And I think it is a failure of our intelligence here, that the rest of us Jamaicans feel ourselves, you know, separated from the Maroons. This for me changed on Saturday, because it was the first time on Saturday that I realized that the victory of the Maroons was the first in the world anywhere under British colonialism. That's the first thing. And secondly, we should, the rest of us Jamaicans, should embrace the Maroons. You know, forget about the Bogle thing, and because that was what we were fed on. That were
very controversial.
You know, the Bogle thing and
what you mean by the Bogle thing?
The whole heap of hanging, the riot where it broke out and them round up Bogle, and that is what we were fed on. Now, my argument is, where the intelligence has failed. That was something that happened when British and Spanish was warring with each other, and it's just that the Spanish did have one set of black people and the British did have one set of black people. The Spanish used
their
set of black people to hold off the British while they escape to Cuba. Now, since then, you have a EU, right? The British and the Spanish, what they are planning to do now is come back as one force upon us. So this rubbish that we have been fed over the years about Maroon, this and the rest of we, that is our thinking as a people has not developed, right? Because if the British and the Spanish are now in what is called the EU, what is this nonsense we are keeping up here about Maroon and the rest
but
of
now,
the
say,
that
say,
was a that was a game long time
say,
ago.
Say just what you mean though. What is the modern meaning in a global economy? That's what you're talking about the EU, of that Maroon example.
First of all, we must celebrate the resilience of the Maroon and the whole self-reliance, because when I was there on Saturday, you get the feel that this is a set of people who, regardless of what is going on, can rely on themselves, feed themselves, and are about their business. And and if the rest of us Jamaicans who sit down and say, boy, government this and big man that, and you don't hear them kind of argument in a compound. So it's about time we form our JU, just like how the Europeans have formed the EU.
What about a CU for a Caribbean Union or something
that
like that?
That too, because the Jamaican situation is a microcosm of what is happening in the Caribbean.
Now we're talking. Okay.
We are separated from the Cubans and from the Haitians because of old-time colonial nonsense and language, and it's time we get past that.
Caller, you're making some heavy points here. I want to get Clinton Hutton's view.
Garnet.
Yeah.
There are several things. I don't think we should just dismiss. I agree that the objective should always be to build a community. That has always been the object and should be the objective. And therefore, I agree with you on that. However, the dismissal of the Morant Bay Rebellion and Bogle. It's a grave underestimation of the historical significance of the Morant Bay Rebellion for Jamaica's history and for Jamaica's freedom, which impacted on the world. The only other event on the world, in the world stage, with that impact in 1865, which came before it, was the conclusion of the American Civil War and the abolition of slavery. But again, these things are not really taught in school in sufficient research.
I'm learning a lot of things I never learned
and
in school.
And so on. So that we should not underestimate that. But what I would say, though, is that the history of our people in all its aspects, whether we consider them good or bad, must be studied and must be debated. Right?
Yes.
That is the only way we're going to get forward. We can't just dismiss them.
No, I'm not.
But the objective should always be to forge unity.
Yeah, but I'm not being dismissive of the Morant Bay Rebellion and what happened. But I am saying, if the British and the Spanish were to sit down and say, boy, remember when you did this? And you remember when you did that, you wouldn't have a EU.
No, that is fully understood.
Right?
No, that is fully understood.
And this rubbish where we call in CARICOM, where since I born, we've been carrying COM and we can't reach yet. We're wasting time.
Cora, thank you for cranking it up. And we'll talk to you tomorrow night, I hope.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What I want to see more of is for people to, in their own communities, to develop their own capacities. I think it is on the basis of that we are going to get good government. Right? We need to expect the best and urge our governments to do the best and to be accountable. But I think that the strength of that is going to come from a people who are conscious, who are united, who develop the capacity to do things for themselves. We have to insist on that. People, as an example, parents need and guardians need to go to parent-teachers meeting and to ensure that the schools are properly run. Right? We can't stay away. It's very difficult to do. I think it is easier to block a road than to go consistently to PTA meetings and to insist that the budget is known, that it's spent for right purposes, that the school is accountable to them, that their children are getting the best, and so on and so forth. We need to insist on those things.
Amen. Let's do it. And let's stick with Maroons here for a moment. You can call in at 926-8631 or the toll-free number 1-888-991-2080. Welcome to Tell Me About It. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am blessed. I'm enjoying the conversation.
Good. Thank you.
And my visionary caller there, what's his name that just came off the line?
Garnett, you mean?
Garnett. I endorse everything he said. Every single word. Now, I would like to ask Mr. Clinton Hutton.
Yes.
Are you a Maroon?
No.
Okay.
Why?
Mr. Meredith Roy is a Maroon.
Yes, so?
All right. I do not like your... I like your unity in the schools, what you just said.
Yes.
Positive. But I do not like your intellectual philosophy of the Maroons.
Why? What you don't like about
okay.
it?
Okay. I have in my possession a
yes.
passport from my grandmother from Ghana.
Yes.
Who was a Maroon.
Yes.
I have never been to a compound,
yes.
but I plan to go this January.
Yes.
And I'm sitting here, and I was so upset.
About what?
About what you said about the Maroon. Not just you, but some Rastafarian and some other, because we were not educated to know that history, since you're a teacher, history, if you know your history, even in the Holocaust in Germany, the Jews had to turn in their own kind for survival. In every history that I have studied, every group of people have done exactly what the Maroons had to do for survival. And the Maroons are not the only one. You hear people harping, oh, the Maroons turn over the other slaves and blah, blah, blah. That is nonsense. In every group, you go back in your history and you read. And I just use the Jews because people are more aware and know about the Holocaust and what happened in Germany more than any other group. But you can use that as a starting point and go back in history. Every nationality were oppressed by their own nationality. Within a group, the Chinese oppressed the Chinese, the Japanese oppressed the Japanese, the Indian oppressed the Indian, and to
this
survive.
This is a community.
Carla, go ahead.
Yeah, to survive. This happens just like what happened with the Maroons.
I think it's a very important point.
But
I don't think you're in deep disagreement with Clinton Hutton because he's been arguing all night that you have to put these things
in context. Yes, I understand that, but I sense that vigilant in his tone about Maroons turning in other Africans, and I don't like that because I am blessed. I have the passport, and guess what kind of passport it is? It is a British passport they had when they made the treaty. They were given British passports too, and I have in my possession, and I plan to go to their compound because I want to learn more.
Well,
on my mother's side and on my father's side, I have Maroon. My father's mother was from Ghana. My mother's mother was a Maroon from Maroon Town, and I've never been there. So what you talk about the school's PTA meeting, we should learn more of our history. We need more Garvey. We need more about the Maroons in the school and the negative things that's been fed to some of the Rastafarian and some of our black people that the Maroons sell out there each other. This is what the emphasis is on, and that is not what, for survivors, the Jews are to turn in their own kind.
Caller, you make a very good point, but it is a point that the Clinton Hutton made earlier, and he did say that the view that they were sellouts was an extreme view, and I think he made that pretty clear. But the point about what the Jews were forced to do in administering their own extermination.
Not just the Jews.
No, I agree. I'm taking your point. Take it very seriously.
Right.
Meredith Rowe, did you want to comment?
Yes, I would just love to interject at this stage, and I hope I'll meet this call in a kampong on January 7th. No, I'd just like to remind our your listeners of a particular clause in a treaty. You see, what a clause, a very short clause, that if any Negro shall hereafter run away from their master or owners and fall into Captain Cudjoe's hands, they shall immediately be sent back to the chief magistrate of the next parish where they are taken, and those that bring them are to be satisfied for their trouble, as the legislature shall appoint. Now, you see, people misunderstood what was happening, Chris, and it was not that anybody that run away, any Negro run away, that the Maroon would arbitrarily catch them and throw them over. It was not so. What you find is that you find people that break the laws. Break the laws. You're talking about two sovereign powers now, you know, Chris. The Maroons and the British. It's a treaty, extradition treaty, drawn up. And that is normal in any country in the world. If they commit themselves, and that you should not harbor anybody that is wanted. And we are not here to determine the guilt or innocence of that person.
Meredith Rowe, I just want to thank you, but note that Clinton Hutton is shaking his head a little bit on some of those last points. We've got to wrap it up. Clinton Hutton, give us the last word.
No, well, I just want to repeat that we have to learn our history. And I would say that the history of the Maroon is a history of freedom. The history of the Maroon has to be seen in context. The actions of the Maroons have to be seen in context. And the actions of our people outside of the Maroon must be seen in context as well. And in that context, all the struggles for freedom that came after the treaty, the Maroons did play a role. And I understand why, right? And I understand why. But that does not make it less that we need to study these things and to understand them and to say them. And they must be in books. Meredith, and they must be in the schools.
Meredith Rowe, what more do people need to know about January 7th and the celebration? Where to go and how to get there?
Okay, Kampong Town lies 8 miles from Magati. So those, for example, coming from Kingston End, Mandeville, they come to Santa Cruz and straight through to La Cova, and they would take a right turn at a tombstone at La Cova.
Okay.
Straight to Magati, and at Magati, they have signs that points to direction to a kampong. So now those who come from the western section, Westmoreland and so forth, if they travel the Bluefields White House through to New Market or they travel through Middle Quarter, they come through La Cova just the same, and they will take a left at the tombstone at La Cova. And those from Senton, for example, if they come through Montego Bay, they can take the hills of Zanzal Spring Mountain, come through Garlands straight to a kampong. And if they come through the Christiana End, they come through Mile Gully and Balaclava,
okay,
and through to Appleton and Magati, and then they'll see the signpost that directs them to a kampong too.
So right at the tombstone if you're coming from Kingston, left at the tombstone if you're coming
from
Montego Bay.
Uh-huh.
Meredith Rowe, thank you very, very much for raising my consciousness.
Thank you,
and
too.
Maybe a lot of listeners too, on the Maroons. Clinton Hutton from the University of the West Indies, thank you.
Thank you very much.
For guiding us through it. Thanks to all the callers. Thanks to all the listeners. And we will see you again on the radio tomorrow morning at 2. I just want to thank everybody who's helped but especially Emily Crooks, who's given us this time. Our producers, Roger Hutchinson from Jamaica, Benjamin Walker from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Charles Nesson, professor at the Harvard Law School and the man in charge of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society, who sent us down here. Thanks to Clinton Hutton and Meredith Rowe again. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow morning. Thank you.
The Big One, the 4-in-1 special, the Quad Pack Combo Advertising Package. Three radio stations with approximately 50% market share, and a TVJ also with approximately 50% market share.